In the year 1976, I sat in a room in the town of Gerstungen, which used to be the German-German border, creepy white walls, two people's police, GDR state police security officers in front of me, interrogating, what is your father doing? What do you know? What does he tell when he comes home from work? Maybe it was the first time in my life when I noticed that it was something like a political subject, without naming it, of course, or that politics really make a difference in how one feels and how different it is living in a democracy or not. My understanding that democratic or undemocratic structures work on the level of the senses concluded something like, ein Gespräch ist kein Verhör. A talk is not an interrogation. The character of an interrogation is breathtaking, makes you very shallow in your chest movement, orchestrates fine shivering on your legs, upper body, trembling your chewing muscles at the same time, trying to suppress trembling, preventing you from crying, causing tension again. Being literally trapped in repressive, undemocratic encounter may disclose itself in direct physical violence, torture, or more subtle ever, in somatic inscriptions of fear and despair. In any case, this conference likes to propose that democratic, undemocratic politics work at the level of the subject. They are corporeal action affecting working themselves into a somatic dimension, configurating the sensorium, the central, or as Magdalena Gorski puts it in her analyzation of the interrelation of breath and politics, quote, politics can take place not only in terms of governance, social movements, but also in terms of quotidian bodily actions, such as breathing, end of quote. In the last two decades, a debate on delegitimization of democracy on the level of political actors already in power or on the way there progresses. In this realm, the question of how to intensify democratic structures is brought up. See also Chantal Mouffe or Isabel Lorey. Delegitimization of democracy discloses itself mostly in a defense against critical ontology politics. For instance, when German top politicians declaim feminist foreign politics is over now, or now we do the reasonable real politics for everyone, not for some left cranks. How can they say something like this? This question is not to be understood in terms of an indignation. It is not an how dare you question, as indignation would only work like a roomy cave for the hollowing out of the feminist and other so-called subaltern subjects' dignity, but the question must concern the rationality, rendering intelligibility to these declamations. I propose, we are dealing with the rationality of critical ontology politics never having been inherent on the level of the guts in democracy. Or as Isabel Lorey states, quote, authoritarian populist and illiberal forces thus built on the constitutive inequalities and patterns of domination of modern liberal democracy. These are the inequalities caused by racialization in those between the sexes, sexual orientations, the owners and the non-owners, the supposedly underdeveloped colonies and the civilized centers, the citizens and those who have no state civil rights in the place where they live. Liberal representative democracy is paradoxically profoundly undemocratic in its basic institutions. End of quote. Taking this in account, it is no surprise that anti-feminist voices heralding the end of progressive politics conduct this in a welcoming back to exclusive Bubenland move, to say it with the filmmaker Katrin Schlösser, although Katrin Schlösser means something different using this term. drawing on universalist and homogeneous notions of democracy anyhow. It seems that the myth and the toxicity of universal politics reside in the cultural archive of a disembodied understanding of democracy itself, and besides conveying the danger of an attitude of learned arrogance and ignorance, a crucial misinterpretation of democracy itself, namely that the disavowing of critical ontology politics, such as feminist politics, inclusive politics, the disavowing of affectivity might not be the same as the disavowing of the claim for social justice, social equality, and hence the disavowing of democracy itself, or as Iris Marion Young proposes in her writings on democracy and inclusion, it is very problematic to problematize strategic identity politics and at the same time calling it democracy, because this notion of universalism strengthens hegemonic forms of articulation and representation. This conference thinks democracy as a quotidian practice, bridging the need for critical ontology politics in democratic encounters within questions on how to prioritize democracy in its possible sense dimension. But wait, is it useful to think about democracy as something that is being sensed in its sense-making components at all? And what could it mean to assume that such an abstract concept as democracy might be sensed? And does the analyzation of the senses and their political potentiality enrich theories of democracy? Or how does a sensory studies approach on the phenomena of democracy might be able to mark and transform the moments when democracy fails to enact itself? In order to elaborate on this further, we'd like to propose that the universalist, humanist, andro and anthropocentric heritage of democracy works like a technique of memory on the level of the subject and the collective. Although democracy enables equality and vice versa, the incorporated residue of a cultural archive that fosters inequality in the name of universalism persists. Does this cultural archive work like a pivot point of power relations, revitalizing inequality on the level of the affects and the senses? This brings us to dealing with democracy from a perspective of theories of embodiment, exploring its collective embodied structures on the level of microprocesses, of inter and intra actions. We'd like to ask, is it possible to gain a more comprehensive understanding of democratic or undemocratic structures and processes if they are analyzed by a sensory approach? In which ways can sensory-led research reveal the essence of democratic microprocessing? Putting into action a somatic and sensory-based epistemology to gain knowledge of democratic processes, not so much as a form of governing, but as a form of being with, we will invite a space for connecting radical theory of democracy approaches with a somatic turn, respectively a sensory turn in the social science and the humanities. Taking in account that democracy does not take place merely on the level of governing social structures, but on the very base of an effective and sensorial engagement of individuals and collectives. Leading to the next question. May democracy be thought in terms of a sensorial ecology? Precisely in connection with current scholars of radical democracy theory like Jacques Rancière, Étienne Balibar, Chantal Mouffe, Oliver Marchand, Nabila Abbas, Dagmar Comtesse, this conference appreciates politics not in reduction to a mere space of negotiation, but as a, quoting Comtesse, system of producing and deploying collectively binding decisions, end of quote. Rather, the focus shifts to the epistemic institutions that precede democracy and politics. The novel understanding disclosed in these approaches, as much as they differ from one another, relates with an experience and effect-oriented, holistic understanding of that which precedes democracy, namely its ontic framing. He would like to call this the democratic. Nevertheless, what has not been achieved in these approaches is a systematic reworking of the democratic in respect to the role of the body in its somatic and sense dimension. What if democracy as an experience that individuals and collectives make is to be analyzed as an embodied and sensed experience? Although there are a few works conducting a sensory approach on theorizing democracy, like Democracy of the Senses by Judith Butler, Sensory Citizenship by Susanna Trinka, Senses of Democracy by Francine Marciello, Democracy as a Central Space by Valerie Dietrich, Political Aesthesis by Werner Friedrich, or The Understanding of the Political Field as a Somatosensorische Gestalt by Uli Linke, apart from this research, the landscape is quite sparse. For this reason, the conference seeks to enrich the research landscape with a sensory and embodied understanding of democracy. Our approach proposes in particular to scrutinize democratic rationality in its sense-making aspects from the concept of sensorial experienceability. This is illuminated by following phenomenologist research on experience or human experience. Accordingly, sense connotates both sensed experience and meaning. Consciousness in human being is always embodied consciousness. In rejecting Cartesian body-mind dualism, it is recognized that physical, cognitive, and sensory experience together fundamentally shape thought processes and ways of being in the world. This framework is particularly relevant to us as it provides to understand and validate different forms of embodiment that fall outside of the typical human categories or any human categories, animals, nature, articulation, as Rachel Hartwood puts it. The conference also draws from decolonial theory and disability studies, which put into question Western academic traditions that have predominantly shaped our understanding of human ways of knowing, of knowledge. The theoretical framework provided by the conference and the term sensing democracy seeks to validate alternative epistemologies as well as embodied knowledge systems that have historically been marginalized by colonial and ableist thought. See also Vanessa Oliveira Andreotti. In this sense, sensing democracy serves as a code for deconstructing private and public spheres. Sensing might no longer be something private and thinking something institutional or public. Sensing democracy as a cyber might be a dangerous place, precarious, an illicit desire that crosses the boundary personal and public, body and logos. A democratization of the self might render an act of public intimacy, demanding honesty of one's rapacious and vulnerable parts. Sensing democracy, furthermore, is a figure that refers to being effectively and centrally exposed in institutional encounters and to claim the logos of sensuality and even of sexuality as an institutionalized possibility of democratizing the self. In short, from the perspective of a somatic turn in the social sciences, it is not just the individual experience that is always a somatic and a sensorial one. Rather, the individual's experience is entangled with a social and cultural order. The idea, however, that democracy is unsatisfactorily described as a form of governing is not new. According to John Dewey's pragmatic philosophy in the beginning of the last century, democracy covers all areas of life. He states, quote, "Democracy is not so much a form of governing, but in the first place a form of living together of common and shared experiences," end of quote. However, agreeing with the concept of democracy rendering a form of life, on the contrary to Dewey's position on the primate of experience, and his irreducible claim for shared experiences, we, as the conference team, would like to emphasize the post-anthropologist or post-structuralist critical feminist materialist critique on the very same primacy of experience, as well as the primacy of shared experiences in order to foster democratic encounters, arguing that experience is yet always situated an effect of social and cultural construction and materialization itself. Or, as Sarah Amott puts it, quote, "You may be sitting in the same room and still make totally different experiences," end of quote. Whether one finds a joke funny or offensive, feels safe in a room or stressful, whether one feels like belonging might depend on the suitability of the architecture, the devices needed, and or the hegemonic implicit rules of a certain institutional context. Quoting Werner Friedrich, "Experiences are always politically aligned situations of experiences. Experience and life itself reside in the rationality of historically produced social situations, providing experienceability and symbolic and physical livability in relation to a subject position, the ontological status, yet allowing for resistance and emancipation. In other words, analyzing experiences of individuals in the neglect of analyzing power-informed social circumstances, discursive and non-discursive practices, entanglements of meaning and matter that frame the possibility to sense, feel, think, hear, breathe, desire, live. The sensibility is of no use in the need to explore democracy's ontic framing. That is why we'd like to stress the social terms of conditions that might disclose themselves in the analyzation of the microprocesses of interaction. In relation to democratic processes, the following epistemological meta questions build a background noise of the conference. They are not in the foreground, though. A. What are the structural discursive power-informed social circumstances that constitute experiences or different experiences in different undemocratic or democratic encounters? B. What is the fabric of experiences from the perspective of a somatic turn or a sensory turn? And is this understanding useful to dive more deeply into the question on or of democratic encounter? C. And what do different experiences in terms of sensing things differently, according to one's subject position, for instance, may tell, transmit about power relations that counteract the democratic realm? These questions are again underlined by what the democratic itself enables, or simply speaking, what it can do. Seeing the democratic not as the end of a process, but as a gestalt that encompasses certain characteristics. For our purposes, the characteristic of the plurality of ontologies, as Yaissa Bokos calls it, is crucial. Plurality of ontologies is an irrefutable condition of democracy. Pragmatically speaking, a plurality of ontologies must encompass a plurality of the senses. However, plurality of the senses in terms of an accomplished and felt state yet within social and public spaces is still utopian. By experimentally crisscrossing the figure and practice of plurality of ontologies with the plurality of the senses, we approach the pragmatic question of the conference. Namely, do social and cultural practices that comprise a democratization of the senses make up for a spectacle promoting equality as an experience? Or, to put it more pointedly, does an experience of equality only reside in social conditions providing a democratization of the senses? And if so, how is this to be proceeded? Jacques Rancière's figure on the unequal distribution of the sensible is instructive, helping to go deeper into a possible relation between democracy and the senses. Democracy, according to Rancière, is characterized by that which he calls the rule of equals. Only the rule of democracy provides a rule of equals. Therefore, politics exists only within the rule of democracy. Only there is negotiation possible. But representative democracies do not just consist out of politics. They are always flanked by that which he calls the political. In Werner Friedrich's reading of Jacques Rancière, the crucialness of this differentiation becomes very clear. Quote, politics stand for the setup, established allocations, visibilities, excesses, the formation, the shaping of society. The political stands for that which is not assigned, not visible, the unassignable, the imperceptible. End of quote. Whereas equality qualifies as the unpolitical condition or precondition of politics, that which is expressed in the equality of sharing the logos, this very same equality is divided by unequal political and social distributions, leading to an unequal distribution of the sensible. The term unequal distribution of the sensible is not just referred to an inequality of aesthetic experienceability according to the social status, but does refer to the granted epistemic credibility of certain social groups and actors, the way they are perceived, heard, valued at all. In his writings on disagreement, Jacques Rancière, inspired by Michel Foucault and Friedrich Nietzsche's vitalist materialist philosophies, locating reason within the sensible body, he elaborates the sensible as a pivot point for reworking social inequality and emancipation. This becomes very clear as he roots the powerful distribution of the sensible in Western philosophy's tradition of differentiation between the language of reason, logos, and the noise of the voice, phone. Deliberative, representative, and argument-based democracies, due to their underscore, namely the unequal distribution of the sensible, always produce a missing trail. The distribution of the sensible, though, is nothing less but an unequal or equal ontological organization of the sensible of a community or a society. Consequently, quoting again Rancière, representative democracy presupposes the establishment of perspectives of certain views. End of quote. Rancière uses the term sensible in attachment, however, to psychomotor understanding. While the sensory is the sensory stimulus, the sensible refers to the senses in their socially and culturally configured meaning. It is precisely this idea of a socially configured physical apparatus, or sensorium, that is developed by the research field sensory studies. The term social sensorium or collective sensorium, social order also, stands for the social configuration of the biological sensorium, thus the inscription of cultural and social norms into a collective sensorium. It is only against the background of these theoretical elaborations that it makes sense to proclaim, quoting Rancière again, social hierarchy displays itself as a sensorial difference, end of quote. To offer a vitalist materialist reading of Rancière in order to emancipate from social hierarchies, somatic inscriptions, it is not enough to just simply gain more knowledge, but to build a framework for making experiences of equality. It is only within experiences of equality that sensorial differences may be marked, irritated, and transformed. Aesthetic experiences are a form of emancipation, politics itself, hence a way of knowing. In alignment with Rancière, this conference invites aesthetic research and experiences as a methodology to mark sense and transform sensorial differences. Grasping the definition of aesthetic experiences by Swiss sociologist Sophia Prinz, aesthetic experiences are those in which the encounter with, quote, unfamiliar cultural phenomena override or alienate the usual sensory schemata, and the social actor begins to reflect on his own unquestioned mode of perception. End of quote. If the usual sensory schemata have to do with an incorporated ontological status, then making aesthetic experiences is valuable for reflecting on power distributions, hence for reflecting on equality and inequality. If aesthetic experiences have a transformative potential concerning the usual sensory schemata aligned with reflecting one's own unquestioned modes of perception, to gain equality, the sensory order possibly needs to be irritated. Following this idea and once more giving attention to the irrefutable condition of democracy that lays in the plurality of ontologies, this conference would like to make up for a plural ontology of the senses. For this reason, the conference aim is to focus on the analysis of the hegemonic usage of the senses, including also the hegemonic usage of reason-based speech in public negotiations, in respect to the political ecology it possibly creates. The conference will focus on the question if and how the late capitalist, Western, modular, anti-hierarchical understanding of the senses as intertwined expressions of ocular, logo, andro, and anthropocentrism entails a hierarchical pre-structuring of the democratic political field. In which terms is the articulation of discomfort of individuals an effect of the hierarchical pre-structuring of the democratic field? Besides the critiques of androcentric and anthropocentric culture, the latter excluding non-humans from reason-based processes of negotiation, the focus of our critical analysis is on visual culture. We draw on the knowledge production of critical visual studies and disability studies that have worked out oculocentrism, producing specific practices, discourses, and ways of speaking that encompass various fields and privileges them over others. It is where research that the body, its senses, and its surroundings, sociality, space, and so forth, may not be separated from one another. Rather, they build a sensorial ecology. In addition, according to current neurophysiological findings, human beings have a potential for a multisensorial orientation in the world, where the senses cannot be separated from each other according to sight, smell, taste, touch, kinesthesia, hearing. David Hoss insists on adopting a relational, multisensorial approach to the sensorium instead of assuming that the senses are structurally and functionally distinct. Nevertheless, in Western socialization, a certain understanding of the senses is obtained, which sports scientist Thomas Charter calls enskillment. Specific enskillment, quote, privilege and privatize vision over other senses, end of quote. Thus, the privilege of vision follows social norms. It is contingent and not a universal constant, and so are the sensory ecologies produced by an oculocentric enskillment. It is the conference content as well as the structural alignment that takes into account that the dominant sensorial order may function as a pre-political dimension of inequality. If political emancipation is a question of a lack of opportunity to gain diverse experiences and the way experiences count for epistemic relevance, then it might be of use to open an approximately sensory egalitarian space of speech and experience. Accordingly, we'd like to ask, how can we come to terms with the centrally and socially hierarchical distinction between meaning and the senses, as well as with the production of diverse sensual situations, not only among humans? And how can strategies toward achieving a centrally accessible emancipation be developed? Our strategies to promote an hierarchical otherwise sensorial order, fostering soundscapes, acoustic learning, and a training in proprioceptive knowledge, conveyed by the content and the methodology of the contributions and the conference alignment. The quest for an understanding of democratic processes and the means of a democratization of the senses, and the engagement with somatic and movement science, as well as social science approaches, demand for an inter- and transdisciplinary approach. The conference underscore consists of a starting point in rather radical democracy theory issues and moves itself up to thematizing microprocesses of the democratization of the senses in different cultural practices. While the first keynote speeches delivered by social anthropologist Professor Dr. Susanna Trinker from the University of Auckland and Professor Dr. Carsten Bünger, University of Education, Schwäbisch Gmünd, dedicate rather to the topos senses of democracy by addressing citizenship in the case of Trinker and education in the case of Bünger, the third keynote speech delivered by sociologist and co-founder of the sensory studies, Professor Dr. Mark Patterson from the University of Pittsburgh, goes right into the chiastic entanglement of the two topoi senses of democracy, democratization of the senses, connecting questions on democracy's rationality and historical conceptualization with the construction of disability. The fourth keynote by media studies expert Professor Dr. Sachi Sekimoto from the University of Minnesota, in line with the conference underscore, comprises the topos of the democratization of the senses while exploring multi-sensory literacy in and for the Anthropocene. The fifth and last keynote, held by Associate Professor Dr. Maria Capsali, who is an expert in performance studies from the University of Leeds, is accompanied by a workshop and addresses the question of accessibility throughout the digitization and sonification of movement practices. This last keynote speech is the closest to the topic of democratization of the senses in movement practices, with a chance for you to make a movement experience yourself. Throughout the conference, we encourage you to be as much as possible multi-sensorially present. This way we may resonate with the in situ needs of ourselves and of others. I now wish you all of us a fruitful conference with an attitude of curiosity and new sensorial meaningful insights. Thank you.